Reading from the Narada Bhakti Sutras, text Sutra 24. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nasyeva Tasmin Tatsukasuki Tvam. In such false devotion, one does not find pleasure exclusively in the Lord's pleasure. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksu Rinvatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripashindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Hare Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any problem with the reception, send me an email. I do have my computer on, and the server is different than my phone. So, here, it's describing what real love is. Sukha Sukhi Tvam. Sukhi Tvam, you're finding happiness. Sukha in the happiness. Tasmin in God. And if we remember the context of the section in discussing bhakti, Narada had concluded a summary of different perspectives on devotion and concluded that the most inclusive symptom of real parama prema, topmost love, which is the form that bhakti takes, he concluded that the most inclusive definition is the consciousness of engaging everything in God's service and the abject distress when you are somehow forgetting or separated from that. That really is what prema is. Prema is defined also in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the Chatur Shloki, the four verses that summarize the Bhagavatam. When it describes prema, it describes a type of love or vision where one sees God inside and outside of everything. Because God is Advayam Jnana, He is inclusive of everything. And the only reason that we are blinded from that is a lack of love. And the lack of love is born out of our own desire to enjoy and control. And when we have that desire to enjoy and control, then we start to see the world as not God. Maya. Ma means not, Ya means this. We see it as not God. That's what illusion is. We don't see what's there. But there is a core psychological reason for not seeing what's there. Because enjoyment entails a sense of superiority and superiority and proprietorship. Not just sensual stimulation, but it's the connection of that stimulation with a sense of control or dominance. So really, to enjoy requires a type of illusion that there is not God, that there is not someone infinitely greater than myself. And what can be greater than a being who's Advayam Gyan, who everything else is included within? When you have bhakti, you see everything is God's energy, and you are happy about that. And you have an attraction to that because you have a relationship to that. And therefore you have an intense love for that. And when you have an intense love for something, then you have an intense distress of forgetting or being separated from that. So this is the vision of prema. You're thrilled because you see God everywhere and you love God everywhere. So Narada explained that the exemplar for that type of consciousness is the gopis. And then went on to explain, because they have such intimate love, that they do not care primarily for Krishna's position, because if they are too cognizant of God's position, it mars the intimate way in which they please God. And you please someone by a type of love. A friend pleases a friend by a type of love. A parent, a mother, pleases the child by a type of love. in a conjugal relationship, you please someone else by a type of mood, a type of love. It's not just serving that person. You have a romance, and then someone takes the position of your servant, or someone takes the position of your mother. So that's the gopi's relationship and mood with Krishna. And that they view him as a different object, it covers and changes their love. So there is an inherent connection between the type of love you have and how you perceive someone, or how you perceive someone and the type of love you have. So for that conjugal relationship to exist, you cannot perceive your lover as infinitely superior to you constitutionally. So in that sense, the gopis are not aware in terms of their perception that Krishna is God. But here it says, even though they're not aware in terms of their perception that Krishna is God, they have a type of understanding that he's God that increases their love. As a mother's motherly affection increases when her child wins an election and becomes the president, or does something great, or there's an awareness, but it never changes the perception. And in that perception, the cognizance of God's divinity recedes far into the distance. Like in Prabhupada's Krishna book, you really can't see the Aishwarya. Although you can't see it, but he explains it, he understands it. Then the further point is made that this kind of cognizance, understanding, not perception, is required for Madhurya. Required for Madhurya, some glimmer, some understanding, even if it's in the background. And if it wasn't there, then it becomes ordinary love. If you forget God, at least from our perspective, Mahamaya, if you forget God, you forget yourself. Because what we are is part of God. When you forget yourself, you adopt a false identity of ego, which is tinged with selfishness. So without that cognizance, some awareness, somehow it becomes ordinary. And in that ordinary love, you don't find pleasure in the Lord's pleasure exclusively. There's something in that relationship for yourself. Prabhupada often describes that the love of a mother for their child is almost pure, but it's tinged with some desire for oneself. You love your child, but it's an extension of yourself in a way that is connected with your own ego. So here in the purport, and it's very beautiful, Satsrut Maharaj is explaining in his purport. What that real love is and how it's exemplified in pure devotees. And he gives a quote from the Adi Lila. The difference. To desire to satisfy one's own desire is kama, lust, but the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, or love. So, somehow or other, once the love is not directed towards God or directed to others in cognizance of their relationship with God, in cognizance of their constitution as part of God, ego demands to appropriate some of that gratification of oneself. But the desire to please the senses of Krishna is prema. Your happiness is pleasure of another's senses. There's descriptions of the manjaris, the younger gopis who are not yet mature. And it's a bhava of service to Srimati Radharani that if Krishna wants to enjoy them, they resist. They want nothing in that relationship for themselves. They want the pleasure of Krishna, and Radharani has the full capacity. Then there's a quote where Radharani discusses her own expression. And this is what this pure love is in relationship to God. I do not mind my personal distress. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna. For his happiness is the goal of my life. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Completely focused on the desires of another. And that's what pure love is, and what Krishna conscious philosophy says is that conception and feeling is our nature, and it exists purely in the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is love, extended to the greatest, rested to the greatest degree on the most worthy and object of love, which is the divine, which is eternal and it's real. And that's what we're aiming for. And right now, we're an egotistical conception, which is pleasure not even for ourselves in one sense, because we're seeking things for a conception of ourselves that is not even ourselves. So it's kind of superficial to the self. It really doesn't touch our soul. Sense gratification really doesn't touch our soul. Lordship and dominion and control, it doesn't really touch our soul because it's directed towards something external, which is the false identity of the mind and the body. Krishnadas Kaviraj informs us, quote, "The gopis have no inclination for their own enjoyment, and yet their joy increases. That is indeed the contradiction. The solution is the joy of the gopis lie in the joy of their beloved Krishna." I think we have an inherent sense that pleasure is love, and love means sacrifice. I gave a lecture in a yoga studio during this past summer, and one imam came to my lecture, and afterwards he came and he really affectionately expressed his appreciation. He said to me, in the modern world, people don't understand that love entails sacrifice. Love is the greatest sacrifice. Because love is not about oneself. It's about someone else. So this is the contradiction. The greatest pleasure, which is love, is not about our pleasure. It's about the pleasure of someone else whom we love. And that feeling in the heart for someone else, that feeling in our heart for God and His glory and His pleasure is the greatest pleasure, even though we are not seeking it for ourselves, which is the definition of love. And therefore, when one really does devotional service, he doesn't do it for oneself. I was thinking in Vrindavan, what an example of purity and power. One person with attachment to the pure holy name, Madhava, he chants between 4 and 5 in the MVT, then 5:30 to 6:30 in Iyengar's slot in the temple, and then 7:30 to 9:30 in Bibi Govinda Swami's home, and then from 1 to 4:30 in the temple. And a lot of people come to his kirtan in the temple. Bhuvaneshwar Prabhu, who's a icon, one of the icons of Vrindavan, has kind of a particular personality. And he walked by and says, "Well, the guy must be good. He only chants one tune. Madhav only chants one tune. It's amazing. He only chants one tune. Not a lot of switching and changing. And it's very melodious and very simple. But people are coming from everywhere to hear him chant." And why? Because it's not about himself. And where did he get that mood? For years in Vrindavan, he chanted the 1 to 4:30 shift. No one was around. any of you are kirtan leaders, see how much pleasure you get out of the kirtan when there is no audience. It's a test. There's no audience. So who are you doing it for? You're getting nothing for yourself. You're leading a kirtan. No one's saying, great kirtan, Maharaj. Great kirtan, Prabhu. No one's saying that. No one's looking at you. You get nothing for it personally. Because it's done for the pleasure of God. And when you do things for the pleasure of God, you could perform a lot of austerities when you have love. Even if there's difficulty, if there's love in the heart, the pleasure of the love is greater than the distress or difficulty. Example given in the purport of Madhavendra Puri, who saw that the Gopal deity had been buried in the ground is so hot, bathing him with gallons and gallons of water did not cool him. Walked all the way to South India to get thousands of miles for the sake of his beloved, and he carried back a load. He wanted to carry back a load of sandalwood pulp. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, this is the natural result of intense love of Godhead. The devotee does not consider personal inconveniences or impediments in all circumstances. He wants to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not distress. It's happiness. I even had a little taste of that myself. One time I went up to the Indian Military Academy and met the principal. It was like West Point. And I preached to him and he became a devotee. And when I went back in the bus, a long bus ride, and I made it very hot, a lot of dust, I got a seat in the back, old man next to me, you know, coughing with tuberculosis. I mean, it was, and I remember sitting in the back of the bus but feeling pleasure. And the distress became only an emblem of my love for Prabhupada and for doing what I have to do in his service. So, Sukhi Twam, finding happiness. This is the secret. If you want to find happiness, you find happiness in selflessness and sacrifice out of love. And just to clear up that it's not codependence, where you serve the whims of someone else that doesn't represent God, doesn't represent any principle, doesn't represent the person's needs, and therefore is something very, very much connected to what you want out of the relationship rather than the pleasure of someone else. Now we'll go to the next section. Where it describes pure devotional service, on the other hand, sit two karma, jnana, yogi, bhyo, vyadi, kartara. Pure devotional service, on the other hand, is far superior to fruitive work, philosophical speculation, and mystic meditation. Adikartara, it's superior. So, he talked about the gopis. Now, he wants to get back to the, not describing or discussing the exemplar of devotion, but the concept of devotion in general. And he has to discuss it in relationship to the other paths of self-realization, which in India is generally karma and jnana. Yoga is part of jnana. It's a detached path based on one's own efforts. So basically, there's two paths, really. There's bhakti and jnana. There's devotion, and there's, which depends on the mercy of God, and then there's jnana, where you ascend to the absolute truth by the power and potency of your own effort, vairagya, your ability to restrain yourself based on your understanding and your discipline. So, basically, there's karma and jnana, because karma means one is still on the attached to the body and the mind and will have to work for oneself. The impulse is too strong. So there's karma when you're just working selfishly, but there's karma where you're understanding the goal, and you're giving up the results to become detached from your fruitive intentions. You're not yet at the platform where you're free for the particular activity, but at least you begin to dovetail or give up the fruits of your activity. Then it becomes connected to bhakti when it's given up towards bhakti, to Krishna. So when you have strong samskaras that haven't been purified, then you have to work for yourself. And by doing that, by at least giving up the fruits of your activities, you gradually gain spiritual strength where you can give up even the necessity for the activity based on your selfish desires, your egotistical desires. Then, at that point, according to your sukriti, you can either renounce all the activities because they're connected with the ego, which is the path of jnana, which has a high prerequisite of vairagya, or you can offer those activities in love. Patam pushpam phalam toyam yome. If one offers me a fruit, a water, with love and devotion, I will accept it. And then the process of jnana can be focused on intellectual discriminatory powers, or dealing with the mind, yoga. But the weakness of karma is that it's fruitive. It's mixed with the consciousness that binds the soul with the body, which is the problem you're trying to solve. And generally in the path of karma, you're doing things, whatever sacrifice you're performing, sacrifice of things for the ego, whatever sacrifice you're performing by giving up some fruits or giving up some, you know, the fruits of activity, which is usually some money or wealth, whatever you're giving up, it's for a fruitive intention. Spiritual life is based on our intention more than our activity. What we really ultimately want to change is our intention and our perception based on that intention. Seeing things as objects, centerizing, putting ourselves in the center, seeing things as objects for our desire, and having a false sense of entitlement to enjoy it. The hand is part of the body. It doesn't have a sense of entitlement to enjoy independent from the body. We are part of God. We do not have an entitlement to enjoy separate from it. Because we're part of God, we're dependent of God, we're for God. We don't belong to ourselves. We belong to the universe. We belong to the divine. So this karma is mixed with this material consciousness. It's saying bhakti, of course, is superior. Because bhakti is the soul, which is the servant of God. You can identify with the soul. Identifying with the soul is identifying that I am part of God, I am made of God, I am made for God, I am meant to please God. That is who I am. I'm meant to love. Or the body. I'm meant to enjoy. I'm separate from God. Two different perspectives. Karma is fortifying the material intention. It has some selfish desire. Bhakti, by definition, doesn't. Love, by definition, doesn't. Love, by definition, means for others, not for myself. And to the extent that it's mixed for oneself, divorced of the things we need for our service, is to the extent that it's not love. So bhakti is superior because bhakti is dealing with the soul. And yet, also is not our constitution. Jnana is rejecting the body and mental state as external to the self. But it is not adopted yet the nature of the self, which is to serve God. Therefore, liberation, which is one of the topics in the Bhagavatam, is described as Muktir hidva yata rupam sarupena vivastita. Muktir hidva yata rupam. Yata rupam. You give up the yata rupam, the form that is yata rupam. It's external. Yata rupam. And you accept what? Sarupena vivastita, you're situated in sarupa, sarupa, your own form, which is to serve God selflessly. Yatarupam, which is to position yourself in the center. So Gyan is transcending the body. But it is not yet embraced the nature of the soul. And therefore, in the Ramananda Samvad, when Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, can you ascertain the topmost verse? Even when renunciation is described, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vajaham Tvam Sabhi. Even when it's described, renunciation, Lord Chaitanya doesn't accept that as the topmost, and he says, ehabhaya, it's external. Why? Because it's external to the soul. Anything that's not dedication and service is external to the soul. Renunciation is external to the soul. The soul is not about giving up something. The soul is about giving something. And then, of course, it's superior to yoga. Because it's very, very difficult to perform. Because the nature of dedication and utilization is more akin to even our conditioned state, which is active. He cut chichinamapi, jatu, kishta, yikarma. One cannot stop doing something even for a moment. So bhakti is the direct nature of the soul. I'm going to stop for questions now. Or if there are no questions, someone can just say hello and then while you're thinking of questions. Hi, Krishna Gail. Thank you for just saying hello. As you know, it's always my anxiety that I'm here in my room wailing away with my arms to express all my brilliant points, and they're just go to the wind without any audience. Just to see how I'm so fruitive. But besides that fact.
Yeah, I want to say more than just hello.
I was fearing that.
Yeah, this is an easy one. Can you elaborate on how enjoyment, for us to enjoy selfishly, it requires a sense of superiority. I mean, I know that we have to be able to control that which we want to enjoy, you know.
Well, it's not just
sense gratification. Huh?
Yeah, okay. Well, this is what I'm thinking, Gail. Our ego, right, our sense of desire, what we want to fulfill, is so much connected with a sense of superiority. And that's why envy is so prominent in this world. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. We're born into this world by the power of duality, of desire and hate. So desire and hate, it's really connected. And the sense of our enjoyment is, it's not just that someone wants to, you know, you can just see that people just are not satisfied with just sensual enjoyment. They want to be politicians. They want to be famous. They want to make their mark on the world. They want to have that sense of superiority. So the ego, which is the basis of material conception, the false conception, it's not just sensual stimulation. And even sensual stimulation is often connected to that. That I am great because I am enjoying. I am superior. Anything else, Gail? On this or anything else?
That point I understood. I know you've made that point before also. But I'm also, when I guess I wish I also understood better how it is that it's not possible to love Krishna completely selflessly if you are not aware to some degree of his superiority.
Anyway, I described it as far as my realization. Some things I just have to repeat in Shastra and then meditate on them. I don't have anything more than that.
Mm.
The only thing I understand is when you forget God, you forget yourself. And there's a motive of forgetting God. And the motive of forgetting God is you can't have that sense of superiority as long as there's cognizance of God. So one forgets that, and he comes into a egotistical conception. So somehow or other, whatever material condition whenever there's forgetfulness of God, there is. I think I'll explain this in a bit of a different way. Whenever there's forgetfulness of God, then there's an egotistical identity and selfishness is mixed in with one's enjoyment. So maybe, you know, when it says in these verses that, you know, the gopis are aware of God, they don't have the defect of forgetting God. Maybe it's just to show that it's not an ordinary love. Because in any type of selfishness is connected to the forgetfulness of God. And the other thing about that is that somehow or other in the verses in the Bhagavatam, it has been established by Shastra that the gopis do have some cognizance of awareness. So I don't know if that solves the psychological answer from the standpoint of why can't the gopis not know Krishna's God and still love him. I think rather than really trying to understand that, it's better just to understand that the point is somehow trying to be made is that it's not ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ordinary.
And you all sounded like, oh, okay, I'm done.
Okay, what else, Gib?
No, in that explanation, it sounded like you were also making a point that if in any relationship that we're, it's not a relationship of selfless love toward God, in that relationship there's a desire for superiority of one person over the other. Is that right?
It's mixed with something that's impure, something for oneself, for sure, right? Therefore, Prabhupada said, love for the mother of a child is the purest thing. It's completely selfish, but there's something there where you extended yourself to your child in a way that the greatness of your child, the love of your child, the beauty of your child is also belonging to you. Where one doesn't feel that in relationship to God, it's a selfless love that I'm nothing. It's not my identity. I'm not God. In other words, there's the self, and you can, you know, what is the false ego anyway? The false ego extends the consciousness to a sphere of matter. It's just an identification. So you can extend that conception to the family. You can extend it to the nation. People sacrifice for the nation. But somehow or other, they're sacrificing for themselves because they've identified with that.
Yeah.
There's something different. What else, Gail?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I think I'm done. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Gail. Let's see anybody else I know is there. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Raj Radhe.
Jai Haribo, Jai Jai Si Radhe. Thank you.
Thanks.
And I know. Thank you. I met some people, I have to tell you. I don't remember who they are exactly, but I was standing in the front of the gate in Govardhan, and this nice Indian couple, I believe with two daughters, I wasn't sure if it was one or two, or it was a boy, you know, paid his dandavat pranam, and I kind of looked at him, and he said, remember us from Govardhan and Bhakta and Bhajra Radhe's house, and they were super blissful on Govardhan Prikra, very pious. I forgot exactly who they were.
Her name is Haripriya, and his name is Krishna.
Such sweet people.
Yeah, they are very nice.
So happy to see me.
They come to our Bhakta track. They told me that they visit.
Well, they somehow happened to be in front gate, and I saw them. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Vanchikopa Tarubya Shaka Tisindabhiya.